Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this Thursday. I mean, it's been a gorgeous day, a little bit of a breeze. It's summer, but it has not been terribly oppressive. So hope everybody doing well on this Thursday as we get toward the end of another week and get closer to the unofficial start of football with SEC Media Days starting on Monday. And it being Thursday, we welcome back in the studio. Yes, he was in Jamaica while the hurricane was coming through, barreled through.
It's been about a month, right, between the wedding prep and
I missed the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I was going to say he hasn't missed that much time.
Were you here for the Thursday before your wedding?
No, it was the Thursday before my wedding, and then last
2 weeks ago.
I missed two.
Yeah, for some reason I thought it was maybe three. But yeah. No. It's great to have you back for.
Yeah, well, Justin Ferguson back.
Maybe I was gone for one of those Thursdays. I don't know.
You may have
whole gang though today. Yeah. on a Ferg's day.
It's no, like, I think one of the last ones I was in was just me and you because Bill was gone.
That's right.
I think that's what
okay.
It was. Yeah.
So and then we had
we're all back.
Yeah. No, it's great to have.
That's right. I was gone the last week of June.
Yes.
But just that what? Well, that was actually. That was the week leading up to your wedding.
Oh, right? I was.
We also didn't do a show on a Thursday because of the fourth. So I mean,
y'all didn't really miss me that badly.
I'm telling you,
but it's good to have you back. Glad you know we were talking about it a while ago, and I know there were a lot of folks concerned.
Oh, yeah.
When they found out where you were.
Yeah, a lot of folks were. We were on the side of Jamaica that did not get hit that hard by the hurricane. It did affect us.
I loved it when he was telling Tracy, you know, the wind never got above 70 or 80 miles an hour.
I mean,
so, just a breeze.
Due to the fact it was 160
considering it was a Cat 5,
it was good. It's good to be back. And like you were saying, Media Days next week, even though I'm not going to be at Media Days physically, I know Dan's going, it is fun, hey, now it's football season. Now we're getting there. It's always... Media Days is always kind of the road marker in my head to be like, all right, now it's time to rock.
Although it's kind of shocking that, you know, I'm thinking
between that and the video game coming out on Monday.
Of the people, that's a big celebratory event
among that may be a bigger reason.
To not be in Dallas, that was a big reason for me.
Big deal for the gamer contingent. But the the thought that you're gonna have an SEC Media Days where on Thursday, I think Jacob and I are going to be looking around and very, very few other people who cover the team are going to be making the trip, just because I think between Auburn, between it being on the last day and the amount of access Auburn has provided all off season long. I mean, Hugh Freeze spoke to
last week.
Hugh Freeze spoke to you guys last week, I think that I can understand why, especially folks that are hyper focused on Auburn, can't necessarily justify making the trip for all 4 days as much as places that are maybe a little more balanced around the conference. And I think it's really cool that we're going to be there for all 4 days, learning about Auburn's opponents and getting the full feel of the Oklahoma and Texas experience next week on the drive. But I totally understand outlets that are planning a more reserved SEC Media Days this year for Auburn.
Yeah, and I can only speak for myself, but as an independent outlet, I don't get reimbursed for my travel. It comes out of, the money we get from the Observer. So when I look this season and I look at the travel Auburn's going to have to do during football season and in basketball season, spending money, it's the flight mostly for me. Spending money on a flight to go for some interviews, weighing the benefit of that compared to the cost.
I would argue four nights in a hotel in a big city. You use your points.
But here's the thing: I usually go on media days. I'll go the night, but I'll get up there the day before Auburn goes,
Birmingham or Atlanta.
Yeah, Nashville last year was no problem. Yeah, I don't mind being there for a day or two. doing the whole thing on top of travel, and then the other thing would it be, I mean, it's literally All-Star Week in Dallas for baseball, and like I you know, I just like, ooh, it's gonna be be a whole lot of stuff going on.
Things aren't reasonably priced.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, it was like, all right, you know, I know I'm gonna want to do some travel this season with basketball and with football. Let's skip this one. Let's save that money, knowing that, you know, we got some trips to make during the season. And like you said, Dan, like, Auburn has done a really good job of giving us a lot of access. We had a ton in the spring. We've continued to have some here with Ambush and a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, there's we might be able to talk to these guys a little bit closer to media days as well, which would be very nice.
I'm really looking forward to the non-Auburn folks that we're going to get to talk to over the first 3 days, because I imagine there aren't going to be too many Auburn-centric folks hanging around there those first 3 days. There's going to be a lot of folks that we don't usually get to talk to.
It's very valuable. It's very valuable if you're going to do that and do that. And I talked about this on our podcast this week. Like, for what I do and for what I write, you know, the stuff for other teams usually aren't as beneficial. But if you're at a place like where you're doing radio every day, or you know, you're at a place where you write several things a day, there's a ton of value. Like our buddy Jordan Hill covers Georgia for 247. He's going to be there all week because he does a lot of that kind of stuff.
I would imagine big city TV what's left of newspapers too. I mean, especially if you're in an area with multiple SEC teams, your Montgomery and Birmingham TV might have, you know, some, you know, multiple days of responsibilities over there. But no, I get it for especially if you're hyper focused on one program.
And meanwhile, I think about it kind of differently. Like, you know, basketball media days, when those roll around in November, you know, it's usually not as well attended because people don't want to make that trip during the middle of the week, during football season, all that. It's easy for us to get in a car and go to Birmingham.
It's usually a day too, right? Yes. Isn't that a crucial difference?
They usually do the women on one day and the men on another. But it's like, yeah, like, again, if media days and next year if they're back within driving distance, like, I will definitely go and do it. A little different though when you got to get on a plane. Also, like what Bill was saying, like during a week where things are going to be a little bit more expensive because it's not just SEC folks trying to go to Dallas for the week.
A lot of folks are going to be in, you know, going into Dallas on Saturday and Sunday this week with the Home Run Derby on Monday and the All-Star Game on Tuesday, as well as SEC Media Days getting underway on Monday morning. So yeah, really really looking forward to it. Excited to see, you know, who we might run into, who we might be able to flag down for the 2 hours. We're going to be live every day from Radio Row. Might try to do a PPE. While I'm up there too, Justin, we might work on something up there. If, you know, depending on who we can flag down from the Observer Hall of Fame. I believe Jordan should be there for much of the.
I think he's going to be there all week.
Yeah, I think Jordan's going to be there all week. So I'll be palling around with Jordan Hill, and maybe we'll try to get our hands on a copy of the game while we're
I'm sure I can pull it off.
Yeah, I think we might see
someone
up there.
Someone there is going to have it.
Yeah. Someone there is going to have it. Yeah. No, we'll be able.
Somebody on Radio Row is going to be playing it. Because that I remember they did that a couple years ago with Revamped. Somebody was doing it was either a YouTube channel or a radio station, and they just had a TV at Radio Row where they were just constantly playing it.
That sounds like the hit that line guys in Arkansas would be doing something like that. Mm-hmm. Ty and those guys would cook up something like that. So we might see if they're doing something like that at Radio Row next week. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's all coming up next week. In the meantime, you know,
portal never stops spinning.
Well,
Bill.
I know. Well, we'd said something about it, and I'd ask Jason every week until yesterday. Well, you know, because it's not unbelievable that you can, you know, you could add somebody, and of course, the day after we didn't ask Jason, Auburn adds a linebacker. And I'll let you give us the correct pronunciation.
I'm going to look it up for you.
Fanage Gote. I mean,
I think that's right.
I think that's right.
I mean, that's my first guess.
I did Feinbaum like 20 minutes ago before we got on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and Cole Kubelik was sitting in for Paul, and we both were talking about the linebacker, but neither of us were confident enough to try to pronounce the name on the air. And so it was like, ah, yes, the linebacker Auburn picked up today. But
Gote,
yeah,
I think is But I mean, so
Fanage Gote is the way I see it. As
what have you heard about him?
Yeah, I mean, a guy that has got a ton of experience. This is going to be his seventh year of college football. You know, he did He did get a medical redshirt one of those years. Was the leading tackler in the Music City Bowl, oddly enough, against Auburn the last time he played. Last season, started a few games for the Terrapins, played in all of them. I think he was like their fifth or sixth leading tackler, had a few sacks, had a pick. Pretty productive guy, very much that kind of inside linebacker mold. Ton of experience. And I think Jason pointed it out on Twitter, and it was a good point. It's like, you know, if you're not at your 85-man cap, you can always be looking. Always,
especially for one-year guys.
Yeah, just always keep an eye on you know, potentially getting another guy into the onto the roster. And I think when you look at Auburn's linebacker core for this year, the important thing is it's not like Auburn's in this like terrible numbers crunch at inside linebacker. But
no.
One of the things you look at with the inside linebackers for Auburn. Quite a few of those guys have some injury history, and again, when you get a guy like him, you know, who you know bringing in somebody who did miss a whole year due to an injury, I think it's just you can never have too many of those guys. And if you have that flexibility, you have that room. Obviously, he's familiar with this defense. His career was when Durkin was still at Maryland.
Was he recruited by
I believe
DJ
so.
Durkin?
I believe so.
I didn't even think about that.
How about you want to talk about how far back this he's gone? He was teammates at Maryland with Byron Coward.
Wow.
I mean, his high school class of 18, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is his year seven of college football. So I'm trying to think, like, a true freshman on Auburn's team would have been doing what? Going into 2018,
into the seventh grade.
You're talking about guys. He's going to have teammates
He's going to have
teammates who were you know young middle schoolers when he was starting his college football career.
There was another one of those things that was pointed out today. I saw online.
Fanage Gote, by the way, is what Maryland says in their game.
Now, there's no emphasis on any of the three. So it's Fanage.
I'm going with Fanage.
I would think Fanage. Yeah. But I mean, it doesn't show any emphasis on any of the
syllables,
of the three syllables mm-hmm. in his first name. But it does say Gote, so it's Fanage Gote.
So Big 12 Media.
So I may have gotten it right.
Big 12 Media Day has been this week.
Right.
Alan Bowman is the quarterback at Oklahoma State, formerly of Texas Tech. Somebody pointed out on
formerly of Michigan too, right?
Believe so.
Yeah, I think he's the. Yeah.
Somebody pointed out on Twitter today that Alan Bowman, when at one point in his career. He had a big horns down thing, and it went. You know, it was a big moment, and they ended up losing to Texas in that game. It was a wild game. The quarterback in that game for Texas was Sam Ehlinger. Sam Ehlinger is about to enter his fourth year in the NFL, and Al Bowman was the starting quarterback against him in that game. I guess that was Tech at that time. So I mean, you get a number of these sixth and seventh year guys. There's going to be a ton of them in college football this year, but you know. Again, with the thing with Gote is like you get a guy who has played a good bit of football at a high level, productive, and can be somebody that you know gives you a little extra layer of security in your inside linebacker room. And when you have as many guys as Auburn does that have been banged up, or you look at your depth and you're looking at
the rest of the depth is young, inexperienced.
Yeah, so it definitely helps. It was a big reason why they went out and got Dorian Moussa earlier this year. Now they're gonna, you know, add another one there with.
I still think there's probably a spot or two where if they found somebody they'd be glad to take them because they still I believe six or seven spots available.
I think the last time I checked today, I don't know if this is not a super official number, and you know some of these could be PWOs or something like that. I think I have Auburn with like five or six spots left. So
I've got them either 79.
I had it 80 today,
maybe
but
80.
I had it at 80, but that might include Towns McGoo.
I've got
79 with that.
Where do you feel like you could stick a last year of college football veteran?
Corner.
Depth chart
absolutely.
Right now.
Cornerback.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking
cornerback like, maybe a running back.
Yeah, I mean, running back if there's one out there would be another spot.
I actually think Auburn would be fine at any of these positions if they don't get somebody.
Yeah.
But if you have room and you can go get somebody, go get it.
I'll tell you what, if he wouldn't mind not starting, I think maybe tackle. Would be another spot where, although there hasn't been any talk of them adding on the offensive line, but I think maybe
they're at 16.
I think a veteran tackle behind one of the two guys, just because right now, if something happens to Tutal or Maybe you're moving Dylan Wade over. I guess that would be that.
You did get Ronnie Chambers.
And you did get Chambers. So yeah. maybe that's not as urgent.
That might be one of those where it's like if something happens there, you just say, all right, is Tyler Johnson Rice, ready? Yeah. You know, so one of those guys. You move Jaden Muskrat around, like that kind of thing. At this point, you're getting depth guys, right? Yep. You know, I think anybody can look at Auburn's roster and be like, well, if you could get like a really good defensive tackle. It's like, yeah, but those guys aren't available right now.
How about this? At this point, if there's a guy in the portal that you think would come in and start virtually anywhere, you probably are in a bit of a problem.
Like, yeah, no kidding.
If we're past July 4th weekend and guys who declared for the portal in December or May would project as starters on your roster, you probably regret some of the decisions you've made over the last 6 or 9 months, I would think, because I mean there's still players that could maybe contribute out there, and the fact that Auburn went and got one today is an indication of that, but I think it's safe to say it seems light on guys who would project as impact players in the conference, understandably so, because if you're still why would they still be out there if multiple people thought that they'd come in and be impact players in the conference, but somebody like Gauthier is, and the fact that he reunites with a former coach, we tend to see that with veterans too, right? Where it's like, I mean, if you're looking for an opportunity,
well,
maybe
you've
maybe
seen
a former
that with Auburn's last two additions from the portal. I mean, because Jaquez Robinson is a guy that was with Charles Kelly the last 2 years at Alabama and Colorado.
Who was the big Canadian receiver that he'd played for Marcus before? Was that Mardner?
Oh, yes, Nick
was
Mardner.
Mardner had played for Marcus at some point previously in his career, too.
At Hawaii.
And there had been there were former Liberty players who'd played with their defensive coaches on last year's team as well. So the fact that he gets to reunite with Durkin is probably another selling point for Auburn there.
Yeah, so that is some news of the day. We'd love for you to join in as we're just getting underway here on the Thursday Drive. You can call us on the Drive hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Rob from Unilife. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls, and we'd love to hear from you. It hasn't been announced yet, but is there anybody but Paul Skeens who should start for the National League in the All-Star game? Did he make a nice last start before the All-Star game?
Only because Chris Sale's pitching on Sunday. That's the only thing.
Only because – well, I mean, Chris
no,
Sale,
Skeen,
Chris Sale leads the league. He leads the majors and wins. I mean, yeah. Chris Sale's
only,
having a great year.
Only because Kershaw's been hurt all year. Hasn't been able to pitch in
And only because Paul Skeens is untouchable.
Also, the Major League leader in ERA also is an All-Star from the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, but he's come back to earth just a tad.
Just a tad.
Lately.
Just a little bit.
But Paul Skeens is phenomenal. The first ever player to be taken number one in the draft, and then the next year be an All-Star. Very well could be an All-Star starter. Today, all he does is twirl seven no-hit innings before he's removed. 11 strikeouts. He did hit a batter and walked one. So I mean, he allowed two base runners.
And they've changed some of the rules. They've changed some of the rules at the CBA to sort of to encourage teams to stop slow playing prospects and bring them up sooner and give them a chance. You know, or not just sooner in their careers, but sooner in the season as well. You know, don't delay them for an extra year for service time reasons. Aren't there perks now for like if the team wins rookie of the year?
You get a bonus if your guy wins rookie of the year and he was on the roster on opening day. You get a bonus first round pick.
Is it? But is it? So if Skeens wins rookie of the year, the fact that he wasn't on
I thought there was something for rookie of the year
and then something else for
something if you're on the roster on opening day. There's a because that's how the Mariners got an extra pick out of that when J-Rod won.
But it's really cool to see Skeens up so early and so dominant. Mm-hmm. And I think people who saw him during that season at LSU thought there was a chance this guy could do that early on in his Major League Baseball career. And yeah, sure enough, that he should be. When was the last? How long has it been since a rookie started the All-Star game for either team? Does rookie starting pitcher is fairly uncommon, I would think.
I mean, I remember very prominent rookies pitching, but I don't know if they started.
For some reason, I want to say Nomo, but that also might be like cheating, and I also might have that wrong.
I can remember who was the who's the Marlins lefty who's on TV now? Dontrell
Willis, yeah.
Dontrell pitched, but he didn't. I don't think he started. Doc Gooden pitched, but he didn't start. I'm thinking of guys who were just fabulous. Of course, Fernando, was he still officially a rookie after he came up and was 7-0 down the stretch? He may not have still been rookie eligible the next year because he came up after the All-Star game his first year. That's a really good question.
I'm trying to look it up.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody just off the top of my head.
Now there have been
started an All-Star game.
No, we have. I'm trying to find that with starting pitchers. I know we have multiple starting pitchers who are rookies in the All-Star game this year,
right.
And it's somewhat uncommon to have. Is it Skeens and Imanaga are both rookie starting mm-hmm. pitchers in the All-Star game, and then there's a rookie reliever as well, Mason Miller. And this is it's only been a handful of times in the last 70 years that you've had three rookie pitchers represented in the All-Star game. I'm wondering that could be the beginning of something of a trend, right? You would think that we're going to see more rookies, although maybe not. I mean, Skeens is a pretty phenomenal rookie in his own right, but you would think we'll see more. I mean, with more rookies coming up and starting the season with their teams, you might see more rookie representation at the All-Star game than we've seen in the past because more guys will have the shot to have a great season. But guys like Skeens and Imanaga don't necessarily come around all the time.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's something else that'll be going on, as we talked about out there in Dallas. While the SEC Media Days are going on.
Hideo Nomo.
There was Hideo Nomo. Okay.
Okay.
95 All-Star game. He was the NL starter.
With the asterisk that he was coming over as a professional, you know, from Asia, which is a little bit different than...
But he wasn't like a grizzled 30-year-old coming over either.
He wasn't. No, he was young.
But he had been pitching professionally.
I know that it bothers you a little bit when players are treated as rookies
Not so much the ones. I mean, with the younger guys,
Matsui bothered you.
Well,
Hideki Matsui was a legendary, Japanese baseball player.
Someone who has been playing for years and years and years and is a long time All Star.
Like the Hank Aaron of Japan came over to America and he was a rookie or whatever.
but when they come over and they're in their you know, early to mid-20s, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I really do think that at times the Korean, especially the Korean League, is more like AAA. Japanese is like AAA and a half. It's like 4A or something. Better than AAA.
Fernando Valenzuela did it in his second year.
That's what I'm saying.
And he was 20.
Well, because, see, Fernando came up and pitched like in August and September and was unbeaten.
It was his first full season.
Right.
I guess technically he was a rookie at that time. So it hasn't happened very often.
It's been nearly 20 years since we've seen it.
But neither of those guys would have been taken in the amateur draft. So I do wonder if you're talking about, like, I wonder if this would be the first time ever that someone taken.
Yeah, it may not just be pitchers. I mean, any player taking number one and being in the All-Star game the next year, a year later. Starting an All-Star game.
Okay, you're going to have to help me here with this one. Mark Fidrich?
Fidrich.
That's right. The bird.
Fidrich.
1976, he went 19-9 with a 2.34 ERA.
Fabulous.
2.34 ERA.
He was crazy. He talked to the ball. He didn't last. He got hurt too.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was phenomenal. He was a phenom. There was the bird craze with Mark Fidrich.
And he was drafted in the 10th round of the 74 draft. So to Dan's point, he was in the minors for a year or year and a half before he came up.
Which was amazingly fast back in the day.
Speaking of Hank Aaron, fun fact about Bryce Harper in this year's All-Star game. This will be, I believe this is Bryce's first start as an infielder in the All-Star game. First time he's been
because he only moved to first base last year.
He is one of four players in baseball history to start at least five All-Star games in the outfield and now start a game in the infield as well. Aaron, Musial, and Yastrzemski, the other three who did that.
I've heard of those guys.
Yeah, they're pretty famous. Pretty famous baseball players. Bryce Harper joins that list this year with a start at first base.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports-wise, 334-321-1390. Come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Here on the Thursday edition of The Drive, what direction are we heading now? I mean, we talked a little bit about Auburn adding a transfer at linebacker.
What do you think? You talked about the UCLA thing?
We talked about it yesterday, when it was hot off the presses. But Ferg, I imagine you have some thoughts on.
We'll talk about it on the podcast tonight.
Will talk about it on the podcast tonight as well. You know, I mean, it's an emotional issue for me because these are two programs that I follow very closely and two schools from which I've earned degrees.
But so I wrote about this in the mailbag for tomorrow. I'll give you a little sneak peek. So Auburn's now out of a game in 27-28.
Right.
And if you look at all the teams in Power Conference college football right now that don't have games lined up in 27-28, both of them have both slots open. There's only one Power Conference team that is in Auburn's spot. They're out.
It doesn't have a game for either
year. Some have just one. But this is the one that's completely open. Like, if a team is like, all right, we'll play two, you know, they can add it there. But
sometimes you'll see, well, we'll play the one year, and then 3 years later you play the return game.
There's one that's got two open, and I think it'd be interesting. It is a team Auburn has played somewhat recently, but I think it would be a fun one. Kansas State's open. Kansas State is open in
27 and 28.
That to me would be a pretty good game for Auburn to pick up. If you think about for Auburn, it's not having to travel to the other side.
No, you're not having
to go.
You're only going halfway across the country instead of all the way.
I think that would be, you know, the way the two programs are projected to be right now. I think in 27 and 28, Kansas State probably be a pretty good little team to face. It's not overwhelming for your schedule. The other thing to keep in mind. By the time we get to 27-28, are we talking about a 9-game SEC schedule?
I hope so. I sure hope so.
So, yeah, Kansas State open. There's some other teams that still have some wiggle room that you could kind of play around with here. But in terms of a straight home-and-home in 27-28, Kansas State. So, I went to the Kansas State game, covered the Kansas State game in 14 out in Manhattan. I had a great time. There's nothing in Manhattan, Kansas. I mean, it is the middle of
the
absolute.
That was a Thursday night game.
It was a fun one, too. Tyler Lockett. That was the Tyler Lockett was the star on that Kansas State team. It was a fun game.
Yeah, I know most of the Big Ten has have their dance cards booked. Remember, 9-game schedules in that league too. So I mean, they're only playing three out of conference games.
One of the ones that you could kind of see, Auburn's never played Iowa before in football, and Iowa has a spot open, but they're already playing Iowa State one of those years. They already know they're going to continue that series. Mm-hmm. So usually Iowa does not add another game besides Iowa State.
And I would think that both UCLA and SC are both curious about adding former Pac-12 teams to the schedule moving forward too.
So UCLA,
well, for two, we talked about that a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, UCLA swapped Georgia and Auburn for
Cal and Utah.
Yeah, I mean there are two reasons.
No
one
brainer.
Is it's familiar teams, and it's going to save them a lot of money and travel wise.
And these are places they've recruited historically,
right.
And it's like
right.
now if you're, I mean, USC and UCLA have always recruited Phoenix, and part of the reason is because they knew every other year they were playing at Arizona State, and it'd be easy to sell kids on a team that had Arizona and Arizona State on the schedule. I'm curious to see the impact of moving to the Big Ten on USC and UCLA's recruiting outside of the Metro LA area, because they've been able to recruit other Pac-12 strongholds. And when you take those Pac-12 teams off the schedule, Does it hurt their ability to recruit in those areas? Because now those kids are not, you know, you're not playing for a team that plays your, you know, it's a little bit like we've talked about, if Auburn stopped playing Georgia every year or stopped playing Georgia entirely, would it impact Auburn's ability to recruit in the state of
maybe,
Georgia?
Maybe. So. I mean, but the fact that Auburn's right next to the Georgia line.
It probably helps.
It does. I mean, now if Auburn...
I've always thought that's kind of overblown. I've always, to me personally, that like, oh, you know, we can recruit so and so because we play in that place.
I think it's the vicinity. I mean, how easy it is to get here from a lot of places. I mean,
sure.
Auburn's closer than Georgia to, you know, a third of the state.
Yeah,
for sure.
I know Auburn recruited Texas more after Texas A&M joined the league, but I don't think they were necessarily correlated. Like, I could be wrong there. I just have always kind of thought,
Well, I think it just sort of opened it up a little bit because, hey, now Texas is an SEC state, so
yeah, like, if you want,
as time has gone by, travel isn't as big a deal.
No.
To kids. It used to be. I mean, it really used to be. Tennessee was the only SEC school that 25 years ago and before recruited more nationally. And they didn't really go – they'd get a player or two from California every once in a while, but they'd go into Ohio, into Florida, and into the Northeast, up to the Northeast. But they weren't really just recruiting nationally the way that Alabama and Georgia and pretty much, you know, everybody is attempting to do now.
I do believe and again, this is just throwing out speculation and stuff. I do think Notre Dame – has some unsettled spots on the 27 and 28 schedule. I don't know how you'd cook that up.
They don't know yet if the USC series will keep going. That's the big hook there for Notre Dame.
Exactly. I think the only non-conference, the only official non-conference, and I believe Notre Dame would have. Do they play 8 ACC games?
No, they don't play that many. They play 5 or 6.
Yeah, it's not even. Yeah, I mean
Notre Dame, they 5 or 6.
I think that the non ACC games they're locked into in 27. Purdue, Michigan State, and Navy are the only ones that are outside of their ACC games. The only ones that they are that they're certain about. So I don't know. I know that's
pretty ambitious if you're playing 9 conference games in Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But I mean, hey,
I imagine everyone in the league is going to play 9 conference games and a Power 5 opponent.
I think
it's a matter of, you know, finding out which Power 5 opponent still has.
I'll continue to bang.
I keep saying Power 5.
Power 4. I'll continue to bang the drum for Auburn to play BYU or Utah just because I'm selfish and want to go out there.
Yeah, I'd say that's
they've never played either of those schools in football.
I mean, after the way I think a lot of people felt about the way the Cal game affected the team last year.
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's very important to know.
If they did, they'd want to play an early, early game.
The Auburn and UCLA series was a mutual separation. I don't think people have put enough emphasis on that. It was always was a possibility, a strong possibility, as soon as UCLA joined the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we're already going to be crossing the country to go play conference games now. You know, be less likely to want to go do that in non-conference play. I think for Auburn's perspective, it's like, man, do we want to go ahead and do this again? Even though, you know, it's only one time. But and I'll say this:
find one of the teams from this zombified Big 12. Right, you know, so someone from Arizona.
UCF. Yeah, I mean,
the teams that are open in those 2 years from the Big 12. I know Kansas State was the one that was wide open. TCU's open.
West Virginia has Alabama in 2027.
Yeah, TCU's open, could have a possibility.
And Arizona State has A&M in 2027. There's a couple SEC versus Big 12. Either Texas or. Baylor is on somebody's schedule too. I saw that. So
334-321-1390. Love your thoughts, and let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Jerry is up first. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. One team I would love to see us play again is Florida State.
Yeah, I'm with you.
We just have such a history with them.
It was a stretch, Bill, wasn't it? It was in the 80s. That they played every year.
Yeah, they did.
And they were all pretty good.
Great games through the 80s. No question about it.
I know it'd be hard to schedule, though, with them playing Florida and Miami. you know.
Well, Miami's in their league.
Sure.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, but, they get Florida, and then sometimes they swing heavy with another one. I think about that Alabama.
Played LSU the last couple of years.
LSU. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The teams that, you know, I wonder how many of these teams are going to jump up to two of them. Yeah. You know, and if that's the case, if teams are willing to jump up to two of these big non-conference games, Auburn could have a lot more options that they could have at their disposal in 27 and 28 now that UCLA is off the books.
I believe Georgia at the moment has Florida State, Louisville, and Georgia Tech on the 2027 schedule. So Georgia,
I think they're making up for the fact that next year they're going to have one of the worst non-conference schedules I've ever seen. After having one of the worst non-conference schedules I've ever seen,
because I knew in the time period we were talking about, I knew there was a Georgia Florida State game somewhere in the mix. I had forgotten Georgia also has a Louisville date and set for that. I wonder if they would keep all three of those dates if the conference expanded
probably not. I feel like it would be easy to chop Louisville off of that.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as it stands now, I believe Georgia and Florida State are supposed to open 27-28, I believe, with a home and home.
Yeah, and back to Jerry's point though, I do like the Florida State idea. That's a fun series.
And that's an easy trip, man. Yep. That's an easy trip.
Yep.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
Are you going to see Buddy Guy? Impact.
No, we're not able to get over and see that one. It's going to be a great show, though. I'm sure.
I'd love to go see him. I don't know if I'm going to be able to or not.
Yeah, we're doing as many as we can, but that one we're not going to be able to make.
He's a great guitar player.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
All right, well, enjoy your show.
All right, appreciate it, Jerry.
Well, you know, Dan, speaking of Florida State, that was our idea for the Auburn Observer Wiregrass Classic, where we're going to have Auburn and Florida State play at the National Peanut Festival Fairgrounds. That's our grand idea.
That's right.
For that, for basketball, we could do that for football as well.
We could play it at the
fairgrounds. Just open up the.
Same day.
Play at Rip Hughes.
You can play at your Rip Hughes too. Yeah, been there plenty of times.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're gonna put a court down at the Houston County Farm Center, and we're gonna let them rock.
We're gonna put a big screen up at the Peanut Festival.
Leonard Hamilton, hanging out with Leonard Hamilton and. But yes, the Auburn Observer Wiregrass Memorial Classic is going to be. It'll be the highlight of the year.
Peanut Festival. Cannot wait for that. No, but that would be. I think Florida State. If
you ever been to the Peanut Festival, Dan?
I have never been to the Peanut Festival.
I bet Bill has. Yeah.
I've been to similar yes, events, but
you've
I've
never
been
to the National Peanut Festival.
I've never been to the National Peanut. So maybe you know what? Maybe
it's a National Festival. Dan.
Maybe I've never been to similar events. Maybe there's nothing similar out there to the National Peanut Festival. So I'm.
How about the the Rattlesnake Rodeo?
I was about to say you were. I knew that was gone.
I went to. I mean, I've told. I went to plenty.
A block away from my house.
God would not love the thought of that.
I was a
were selling parking spots in front of our house.
My next door neighbor, though, in my hometown, he had multiple snakes, and they'd always be getting loose.
Yep.
And a couple of them were rattlers. That's like that was never nice. When you got three younger sisters, mom is not taking that very well when one of the rattlers gets loose next to
you. You get a knock on the door like one of my snakes got out.
Yeah, okay. Or I get the phone to ring and it'd be like, "Oh, I'm going to tell Reggie's calling saying the little rattler got out." So be careful.
I'll tell you a quick story about the Rattlesnake Rodeo. And when I was growing up, in the Rattlesnake Rodeo, like in the build up to the event, in front of City Hall and Op, they would have these cages that had rattlesnakes in it, and it was ones that people had caught and brought, and they had a contest.
Yeah,
whoever could catch the longest
rattlesnake. Yeah.
Okay. Crazy enough as it is, there was one year, and it was only for one year, and I promise you this happened. There was one year they gave an award out for a junior, for whoever caught
the smallest person
to catch
and
a snake.
It was awarded posthumously, sadly, but it's like.
But you know, we grew up.
How's that kid doing today?
Our house was not too far from City Hall, and we would just have these kind of like nightmares that like, yeah, what if the snakes got out? And like, we're right by there. It's crazy. If you ever seen a that you know the rattlesnake catching was crazy, and then the rattlesnake race You know how you race rattlesnakes? They did it on the track at our high school stadium, and they painted a circle on the track and then a dot in the middle, and they got a garbage can full of rattlesnakes, and they had them marked, and they poured them out in the middle.
The first one out of the circle. Yeah, what's great is you're in the stands, and here they come heading for you.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's the craziest thing ever. And they would.
It's not like a fence is going to keep them.
Well, they would dump these rattlesnakes. So they would have like 10 rattlesnakes in a garbage can together. They'd dump them out for a race, and two of them would be dead because they had bitten each other.
Right.
Oh, yeah, rattlesnakes turn on each other, man. They're not.
You're firing them up a little bit.
That's not a pack animal. Like,
but I will say, rattlesnake meat, not bad. Not bad if you've ever had it before.
I've tried it.
Yeah. It's not great, but it's not bad. I'll tell you that.
Fortunately, we've gotten past the days where, you know, that might be something to fire up the crowd at halftime.
That's how they should do the basketball game. That's how they should do the baby races. Right, that's how
dump them out of a garbage can. See who crawls out quicker.
There was a
first one out of the circle.
They had that. There was famous for the rattlesnake race. They had a grease pole climb, which was always funny to watch. And
for the rattlers,
no. For people, that would be even funnier
for the babies.
And then there was
it's meal up at the top of the pole.
It always cracked me up. For like the thing that Op was known for was the rattlesnake.
Yeah,
radio,
it absolutely was.
When I was growing up, they used to get like some pretty big names to do the concert there. They did a country concert there every Saturday.
You're gonna win a Pulitzer someday, and it's gonna be home of the Rattlesnake Rodeo and Pulitzer Prize winner Justin Ferguson.
Well, I mean, they don't claim me anymore.
You're not gonna get
top
billing.
The only thing that ever got talked about Op after the Rattlesnake Rodeo was Mike Dubose.
Yes,
when he took over.
Yes, Mike Dubose. Yes,
that's pretty much it.
Was the defensive coordinator there and the head coach not too long ago? There's also another.
Ed Rigby's in the house now, right?
Ed Rigby's now the head coach at Op. Yeah,
my good pal.
Like I was saying, it was always funny. The rival city, our rival was Andalusia.
Mm-hmm.
Andalusia is known for being the world championships of dominoes. And I was like, I always thought you couldn't have two more different things to be known for.
A board game.
For the world champion.
Or poisonous snake.
Or for a festival every year where they get poisonous snakes and have a country concert. But yeah, they used to get pretty big country.
We should be on location for the World Series of Dominoes every year.
Yeah, I'd much rather be there than on location.
When I was in middle school, Blake Shelton played the rodeo, and it was right before he blew up.
Huh.
And it was always crazy because every time you see it, like you see Blake Shelton when he was like on The Voice or whatever, and I'd be like, that dude played the rattlesnake rodeo. He ain't that big time.
I know we're up against a break. I told the story recently enough, but you weren't here, Ferguson, so I'll tell an abridged version now. I grew up going to the Boggy Bayou Mullet Festival
in
Niceville, Florida.
In Niceville, yeah.
On your way to Crestview, right by the Okaloosa, right by Okaloosa Walton's College, or now Northwest Florida State's College. Chad Baker Mazzara. Alumni,
alumnus.
Yeah, I was gonna, among alumni, yes. Tay Waller, Dan Peck, you know, whatever. Duarte, NBA player.
Chris Duarte, I forgot Chris Duarte played there.
So there's the big four. There's the Mount Rushmore right there. It's the big four. There was a year they'd always try to get an up and coming country singer and a headliner and a classic rock act to play the three nights. There was one year they booked a singer, and between booking him and the actual date, his song "Achy Breaky Heart" became a very big hit, and he desperately tried to get out. According to reports, desperately tried to get out of playing the date, but they held him to his contract. That night, Billy Ray Cyrus sang the national anthem at a Braves playoff game, got in a helicopter, and flew to the Boggy Bayou Mullet Festival in Niceville, Florida, to play his gig as the headliner that night. I think Charlie Daniels played like a ton of Boggy Bayou Mullet festivals. They had some favorites who became pretty common. And you know, speaking of the Blake Shelton thing, like it's still pretty wild. Like, Zach Bryan played Auburn in the last played the rodeo just last fall.
All right, we are way behind. Got to get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
I think the other for air that is
Alabama. This is the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls. We'd love for you to join in here in hour number two, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. What day is today? Today is the 11th. I'm 6 days away from my next appointment.
All right.
At the orthopedic clinic. Yeah, I'll tell you what, this being old, you gotta get things checked all the time. It's sort of like your car. You gotta keep it, keep it tuned. There's some things that I tell one of the sons, you know, I remember an old commercial that talked about car repair, and it was like the mechanic would say, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. And generally it's going to cost you more later. So It's one of those things where when things start not working the way they should, time to get them checked.
And the orthopedic clinic guys, I mean, the folks there are the best. I mean, you're happy to go in there and get anything checked out. And they've got you straightened out on a couple of things recently,
this one is not a repeat.
And the fact that you haven't provided an update on it lately is probably a good sign, right? Because it would indicate, you know, not terrible amount of discomfort in the hip or the shoulder.
I'll tell you what it is. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where at certain times my arm,
okay,
from like the bicep down, feels like I've got a tourniquet on it.
Ooh,
I mean, a lot of times I'll wake up and I think I used to think, well, I'm just sleeping wrong on it. But I mean, I can't clench my fist, or if I'm doing some work, yard work or things like that, I'll have to use the left arm because I mean, it'll just get that way. So I got to figure out if it's, you know, it could be carpal tunnel thing.
Could be the ulnar, right?
It could be some nerve. I mean,
You never heard about the ulnar too much before.
No, you didn't. Before Tommy John surgery,
Bill, it would be crazy if a doctor told you needed Tommy John surgery. Like, I just got to be like, I can be honest with you.
Well, I've got.
Oh, it's gonna be.
I do have a torn rotator cuff.
I know.
And I'm not worried. I said I'm not worried about pitching anymore, so that's okay.
The ulnar. We're worried about the UCL, Bill. We got to.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's sad because I think Bill has fallen into the trap that so many players these days are getting into, where it's just he's trying to maximize velocity more than anything else, and it's really hurting his arm. We've seen it happen to so many greats, Spencer Strider.
But they come back throwing harder than ever.
I think doctors are worried that after he's done pitching, he's going in the yard for a long time. Can't get the yard work away from him. Hopefully everything's going on with the arm, though.
Yeah. So I mean, I just need to get that. Need to get that checked
out. Bill comes back and he's now throwing submarine. Like
seriously, that's the way I have to throw now. I have to throw sidearm now.
Yeah. My dad's got such problems with his shoulders. Like whenever he tries to play golf, he can't get it over. Like he can't get the club head like much over his hip.
I can't go much. Much more than this.
Now here's the thing.
Yeah, that's great for radio.
Bill's hand is about. I should have been explaining that.
That one's on me.
No, I'm three quarters about it as high as I can get the arm to throw. But fortunately, I'm not throwing much. I mean, Kennedy isn't catching the heat yet.
You can always transition to the outfield too. I mean, we can always
see that's where I was, and that's exactly where I initially hurt the shoulder.
Yeah,
softball, no warm up. Wanting to show off the arm.
And keel.
And it was, I mean, as soon as I let that ball go, I felt it was a great throw, and I knew it probably be the last great throw that I'd ever make. I could tell when I threw it that something wasn't right.
I had a trainer tell me a long time ago, like, the shoulders, you got to be so careful after, he even said for competitive athletes, 25. Like, you got to be so careful.
Man, you had better warm things up an awful lot. Stretch.
He said 25, but especially 30. Like, it doesn't heal like it used to. Like
you're right,
I mean, that's true. That's true of other parts of the body too. Yeah, but it's especially pronounced.
And it keeps getting tougher.
He sees people over 30 lifting heavy weights over their shoulders, and he just cringes because it's like that's. That's gonna if you hurt yourself doing that, and it might not ever go back to the way it was. So yeah, I'm sure you know what, this all dates back to the folks at the orthopedic clinic.
Absolutely.
are the best.
Yeah, they're who to go to if you have some concerns like that.
And they're one of our one of the sponsors for
Media Days.
And they're one of our presenting sponsors, helping send the team to Media Days this next week as well.
I mean, I thought, well, you know, we could do an hour on injuries if we wanted to, but no.
You usually have to play hard enough and try hard enough to get hurt, so I never really got hurt very often. It's kind of tough.
That's all right. Give it time.
Yeah, no.
I'm not claiming that I did either, but yeah. I mean, as time goes by, things can happen just more frequently.
Yeah, I played pickleball earlier this week, which I've only ever done once before. With my brothers who are in town, and we played for like a couple hours, and like I felt like I was dying by the end, because it was so hot outside.
Yeah,
because we were there like 4 o'clock.
That's probably the primary.
And like I got home that night, and I was just like, why do I feel like I'm dying? Like walking up the stairs, I'm like, I feel like I'm dying. What is going on? And yeah, it's because you don't do anything physical anymore, genius. That's what happens to you.
Yeah, it's different muscles with pickleball than tennis, right? You're exercising different sort of stuff. Like I could, a lot of
bending over.
Yeah, yeah. It's you
Which
know
not it's, great for someone who's not very flexible.
And the taller folks who aren't super flexible. Like, you know, pickleball is not.
Yeah, everybody down there is like, you know, scraping it off their knees, and I'm like, hey.
I said, can we go get tennis rackets, please? Can we go back to doing the sport where the ball bounces up to my level again, please?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's so that's one of the reasons Tex loves it so much.
Pickleball?
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right. No disrespect to him.
No, not at all. All right, let's get you the numbers. We'd love for you to join in if you want to actually talk about something else. 334-321-1390.
I was gonna ask Dan what he's most excited about going to Texas for. Maybe not like work related.
Like, I mean, I have
you
never,
like Dallas?
I've never spent any. I mean, outside of the airport, I've never really spent time in Dallas.
This is downtown, isn't it?
We're downtown. We're very close to Dealey and the JFK Memorial and like the entire.
At least you're planning something.
No, I'm gonna go try to see the memorial. Yeah. I mean, it's a fairly significant, you know, part of that city and very close to to our hotel. But then there's also I'm a fan of Texas barbecue. You know, I'm happy to eat that whenever I get out there. They do have In-N-Out Burger in
I need to revisit my Texas list, and then I'll tell you which
they're sending us to an event Wednesday night at Globe Life, the Rangers stadium. Mm. So that'll be a cool thing
right
to,
after the All-Star game
to check out. Yeah, it's we've got events on Monday and Tuesday.
It's a very interesting stadium.
Yeah, we've got events on Monday and Tuesday outside of, like, I think the Monday night event is, there's something at the Texas Theater, and then the Tuesday night event is the bowl games sort of thing. But they've got events scheduled and stuff.
I remember every time I've been to Media Days and Dan's been there, Dan does the events. Like, Dan does the media events, and like the rest of us are like, who
karaoke
does that? Dan.
The karaoke thing I just got roped into with Barrett last year.
You were there the year it was the Dave and Buster's, the Dave and Buster's experience.
Bill and I, well, you know what though? Dave told us to eat there. Like, I was there. They gave us the meal voucher. Yeah, it was like, that's where you can go to eat. So, I mean, even if you weren't terribly excited about the games.
I played arcade games for 3 hours. I didn't think I was ever going to run out of money.
I did that. And it sounds like they're going back to that with the Tuesday night thing, that they're sending us to a place Tuesday that has a bunch of old-timey arcade games and stuff. So I'm
that
sure
that's
fine. Yeah, I think it'll be a good time. But no, just getting to explore Dallas some, and I think I am insisting on a trip to In-N-Out like Sunday night once we get into Dallas. So yeah, it should be a fun 4 days. If there's something in Dallas I need to see, you know, time permitting, you know, I'd love to hear recommendations and things. But I am going to try to take a little bit of time and go explore downtown. The event Among other things, the theater Monday night, the Texas theater, that is actually where they caught Lee Harvey Oswald, among other, you know, famous historical you know, notes about that theater in downtown Dallas.
All right, again, the numbers to get you through, the number to get you through, the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. You can also text us.
334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Let's get to the Drive Hotline, and Hank is up first this hour. Hey, Hank.
Hey, y'all got the phones fixed.
Yeah, man. They're working. I think that actually they seem to sound even better than ever.
Yeah, shout out to the folks here at Auburn Network who worked hard to restore order after the electrical storm.
Yeah, congratulations. I know y'all are excited about that.
Oh, no question.
Y'all were talking earlier about recruits and the proximity to where they live and how that plays into their recruitment and all, you know, Auburn and all that. But, you know, I've been thinking about this whole Juju Lewis thing. Everybody talks about, oh, well, you know, Auburn's so close to home, and don't you want, you know, your family to be able to see you? But when you're pulling in $1 million or $2 million a year in the – age of NIL, I mean, that really kind of diminishes that, don't you think?
Yes, if you're one of those that is getting the top money, sure, that would make it very easy for you to be able to transport your family back and, you know, back and forth. For the ones that aren't, say they're getting about the same amount at most places, and it's not an exorbitant amount, then being closer to home makes it much more valuable, much more attractive.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because, you know, you can buy a lot of plane tickets from Carrollton, Georgia to Southern California for $1 million or two a year. But and I guess that's what we don't know is, okay, so for your top-level guys, it might not be that big of a difference. But for your four-star offensive guard, I mean, we really don't know how much those guys are – pulling in their deals, I guess.
No, and that's one of the things that I wonder, and I saw a story today where the NCAA is concerned with another court ruling that is really looks like it's a step closer to players becoming employees, and if players are employees, then you're going to have an idea of what their compensation is.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that because, you know, when we were talking about the quarterback from Georgia who went to Nebraska like 2 days before the signing period.
Yeah, Rayla.
And that just opened up more money for Georgia to get that kid that was supposed to go to Florida State or maybe Auburn, that safety, that number one safety. So it's interesting, but there's so much about it that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I got one other thing for you. I heard this on another show a few days ago, and I thought it was an interesting question. Maybe y'all could toss around. If you were thinking about the Mount Rushmore of Auburn recruits in the last 20 years, guys who outperformed, you know, they came in low and they finished, you know, they well outperformed their recruiting rankings. Like, who would you put up there?
Over the last, let's say, all right, you want to say 20 years, or you want to just go ahead and say since 2000?
Are there names that come to mind of, like, guys that weren't big-time recruits that became multiple-year starters that like, stay like oh, yeah, that guy turned into a very big deal. Folks,
you know,
he was
guys I covered, the first name, I mean, very recently, the first name that jumped to my head was Roger McCreary. This is a guy who was going to go to South Alabama, three-star player, and then he ends up becoming an All-American corner at Auburn. So that was the first, like, so you're talking guys like that kind of trajectory. You know, there's a few of them for sure, but Roger's the one that's always crazy because, like, there was the stat, like, Roger was the 989th player in his class coming out of high school, and he ended up finishing as an All-American and a second-round pick. So, I mean, that's pretty special kind of talent there.
I'd tell you the one that I'd put up there, and, you know, he's a little bit of an older guy, so maybe the recruiting rankings weren't quite the same, but I think Cindric Marks was ranked as, like, a two-star or something.
Yeah,
and
he was.
He ends up getting drafted.
Mm-hmm. People felt he was too short.
Yeah.
There's
else. Was Josh Bynes
I always think, too, about D.
No, Josh was a little higher than that. I don't think he was – extremely highly rated.
I'm sorry to cut you. You were talking. You said D. Ford.
Yeah, D Ford would be another one that was a three-star. And then I think we all kind of forget Nick Fairley, I believe, was a three-star coming out of JUCO.
Yes. Yeah, he was. Well, the thing is, folks weren't sure exactly what he was going to be. You know, was he an offensive guy? Was he a defensive guy?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. All right, guys. I enjoy the show. Appreciate what y'all do.
Good stuff, Hank. Thanks for the call. It's a good question.
A really good question.
But I do wonder, though, if you're pulling in big numbers, how much of that do you want to allot to bringing the family back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
I still think that you'd need to be getting a little more to be going farther away, generally. We haven't really gotten to this. Have you seen the story about the U.S. Appeals Court ruling today?
Not quite. Can we stay on the Mount Rushmore thing for a second?
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of other guys who, and I mean
not five star.
Okay,
in other words.
Guys who weren't supposed to become starters when they signed with Auburn on signing day, who had like pretty productive careers that come to mind.
How many guys do you sign that you feel like, oh, they'll never be a starter?
Maybe not starters. Guys that weren't supposed to be multiple years.
Guys that you didn't expect to be big impact players.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, would Daniel Thomas fit that bill? I mean, as a guy.
Thomas was a last minute addition. Absolutely.
I mean, Whitlow had his moments, didn't he? I mean, Jatarvius Whitlow Whitlow was what was Zach Clayton? On signing day, you know, he's a local guy. You know, mm-hmm. Don Dunn would be the big smile on his face whenever Zach Clayton gets mentioned. You know, one of his dirty work guys. Love the Senderic mention. That's probably another very prominent example of somebody like that who blossomed into more than folks necessarily thought they were going to be.
DT's a great example. You talk about a guy who was three-star guy. If I remember correctly, Daniel Thomas only got to Auburn because Auburn missed on somebody on signing day.
And
it was another Montgomery kid, wasn't it? It was the kid that ended up with going to Nebraska?
Yeah, maybe so. But I do remember that they only had a spot open up on signing day and contacted him, had sort of asked him to wait and not sign just in case, and they did have
some. Well, and I'll tell you this, not to go, not Mount Rushmore yet, but what I think of when it's all said and done, we'll see how he does this year. But I mean, Jarquez Hunter could end up being in that spot. You talk about a guy could be all SEC caliber running back who is a three-star coming out of high school, pretty overlooked, and honestly, of a really rough recruiting era for Auburn, the only hit. I mean, he could end up being that one, just out of nowhere. Like, wow, how did he become that guy out of all that?
Isn't he the only guy left?
I think he is the only class.
Tate, I think, is the other one, right? Weren't Tate and Jarquez true for Tate Johnson? Maybe.
I think Tate was a little earlier.
Oh, that might be right. Yeah, Tate's. You're right. From Jarquez's specific class, there's practically nobody.
I think he's the only one.
It might just be him.
But Roger was the one that immediately came to mind for me.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because all American second round pick off of a guy that was going to South Alabama before Auburn. That was Kevin Seal. Kevin Seal would tell the story. They evaluated him. They gave him a second look late in the recruiting cycle, and he just had a feeling about him. It was kind of the same way with Daniel Thomas too. There was that little stretch there for Auburn DBs that if you were kind of a late in-state guy, they found some value in it. And Nehemiah Pritchett was that guy, kind of type of guy as well. Evaluation that kind of stood out from, wasn't necessarily the blue chip, the household name. And I think that's the thing with recruiting, though, is that, you get on a macro level, you need to recruit highly rated classes year in and year out. And so in a vacuum, you need to have really, really good, recruits. More often than not, the blue chip guys are the ones that pay off, but there's always room for three stars and two stars to kind of pop. So those are always cool stories.
We need to get to our first break. John, hang on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Like the mighty Live Oak, Nick Hayes and his team at
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Right back to The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. On the Mount Rushmore of kind of unheralded recruits, one that immediately came to mind, I think he was, I have three, but the first one that popped into mind, I think he was a high two-star or low three-star coming out of Greenville, Mississippi. Quentin Groves was not highly rated out of high school, was he?
He was not.
Or am I forgetting that?
No, he was a three-star.
Nope.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
He was a three-star. And then I have, you know, one guy who I don't even know if he had a star coming out of high school was Will Hastings.
Yep. Walk-on. Yeah.
Who was, yeah, a walk-on who I think they brought in to do onside kick.
Yes, he was. He was Gus's onside kick specialist, and that didn't work out, so they moved him to receiver.
Right. And then, Bill, you'll remember this one back from the 90s. You remember Hicks 4?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I don't even remember where he came out of, but just absolutely great possession receiver and somebody who Auburn won some games because he made some big third down catches.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's another good one.
You know, one of my favorite stories of guy. I mean, and this isn't even. I mean, he was a walk on, but the Rod Smith story is always like Rod Smith was right. Rod Smith was James Swinton's high school teammate, came to Auburn because I think they were very close friends. I think Rod might have been a preferred walk on, but actually the way the story I was told was Rod went to the open tryout. Rod went to the, you know, they used to do, maybe they still do it, but they had a, you know, a, if you're an Auburn student and you want to try for the football team, come to this practice. And Rod made a diving catch and someone said, hey, that's really impressive. Come to the regular practice.
Yeah, he wasn't the fastest guy, but he could get open and he caught the ball. I'll tell you this. Now, this is because we were talking the last 20 years. I'm going to go further back than that, but I'll tell you a guy locally, when Auburn was recruiting Sean Smith, in Opelika, there are two guys. His brother Brian, who was a much bigger factor. I mean, of course, he was a big guy at 6'6", 6'7". But Greg Taylor was the Opelika quarterback and became an outstanding receiver at Auburn. Both those guys, if I'm not mistaken, were two stars that really were big factors, much bigger factors than Sean Smith ever was.
I'll tell you guys this: Rod Smith was a friend of mine in college, and I remember talking to him, and the school he kept trying to get into was Florida, and Florida wouldn't offer him. And so I went to Tiger Walk in 07 and, like, saw him in Tiger Walk, drink, this is your game. And he looked at me and said, I got this, and added an expletive at the end of it, and absolutely went off against Urban Meyer and the Gators that day. And was one of the reasons Auburn built such a big lead in the first half of that game.
Yeah, Rod Smith was a total sleeper as far as a guy that, you know, came to Auburn without a scholarship and finished his career. I mean, he entered his junior year as the number one receiver on the team. I mean, I guess you could also look at Courtney Taylor, right, Bill, as a guy who...
Yeah,
I mean,
Courtney was a lot more of a long shot athlete. Everybody loved his athleticism, but no, he wasn't highly rated at all.
He was out of Carrollton.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you guys.
Great stuff, John. Thanks for the call. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline. We'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise.
Yeah, as we look ahead to SEC Media Days getting started next week. Talked a little bit in the first hour. Auburn adding a player out of the portal, a linebacker from Maryland, seventh year in college football, but between injuries and the extra year of eligibility afforded to people during COVID-19.
Fanage Gote.
Fanage Gote. Originally, I believe, from Fort Myers, Florida, and is moving on from Maryland, looking to add some depth and some veteran production to Auburn's linebacker room, which, I mean, when you get beyond...
Well, you have.
I mean, the guys who have
Eugene
played
Asante, you have
Austin Keys.
Austin Keys are the two experienced guys coming in, and then Darian Massey is the transfer in. So, I mean, they've got two transfers. So that'll give them four guys with a lot of experience at this level.
Right, which is. I mean, it's still. I could still. You know, you're leaning on a couple of new contributors, depending on how much those guys are going to play. Is Steiner around, or did he?
No.
Did he?
No, he left. He transferred.
He's left. Okay. I thought he was in the portal. That was.
I don't know that I've seen a landing spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
334-321-1390. And I think Jerry's back with us. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to contribute to the Mount Rushmore. What about Bo Jackson?
Well, Bo wasn't as highly touted as Allen Evans, but he was
such a crazy story.
He was still considered a top 100 player. So I mean, it's not like he was an unknown. It's just people weren't really sure what he was going to be. He was one of those guys designated as an athlete.
Yeah.
And boy, that was a great designation for him, because I have never seen a better athlete. But but he wasn't as unheralded as you might think.
I know this is a conversation about football, but a basketball one just came to mind. Bryce Brown.
Yeah.
You talk about a guy who retired, who ended his career as one of the best 3-point shooters in SEC history. His next best offer was Charlotte coming out, and Auburn was really the only big school that took a chance on him.
Did Jared have an SEC offer? I mean,
Jared was a 4-star, but he had a few, but I don't know if he had any other.
I don't know
if
he had another.
Bryce was a low 3-star coming out of high school.
I'd always heard that Bryce and Jared were both guys who were at Auburn, and I mean most notably Georgia didn't offer either of them, which is crazy to think about. But the foundation of an SEC regular, the backcourt of an SEC regular season champion and an SEC tournament champion and a Final Four team, basically told by virtually the entire conference that they didn't see them as players at that level. Like a pair of incredible finds for Bruce. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought, Alabama was recruiting Bo as a linebacker, and I'm sure he would have been a great linebacker.
Oh, I'm sure he would have been a great whatever position they wanted to play him at. But the legendary story is that Ken Donahue telling him that he wouldn't play for a couple of years at Alabama.
Yeah. Fantastic athlete.
No question.
Great stuff. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry.
And Wesley Steiner, by the way, is a Washington State Cougar.
I missed
that news earlier in the summer, but he is. He's headed to Pullman.
Well, good for him. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in here in the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
So.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. We got a couple of minutes, Ferg. Talk a little bit about the Observer, what you got coming up.
Yeah, we're back back to regular scheduled programming this week. Had a story earlier in the week about just kind of the news and notes around football and basketball from the last couple of weeks that you can check out. I also wrote on Wednesday about basketball, talking about road wins and road record and how important that is. Bruce talked about that last week in Lake Barn. Dug into some numbers. What does it take to win a championship? What do you have to do on the road and how Auburn can get better there? Mailbag out tomorrow. Dan and I will do a podcast tonight talking about some of the same topics we've talked about here today and get into some other fun stuff. And then next week, Dan will be at Media Day, so he's going to have to be our eyes and ears out there, and we'll be cranking out some stuff for getting closer to football season.
I imagine that. I mean, this is the last podcast we're going to do before the release of the game, too, right?
Yeah.
So we might talk a little bit of that because it's Monday afternoon, looking forward to it. Folks who have been beating the drum for, was it Lamar Jackson posting something on social media about his contention that the players who weren't able to be in the video game in the decade that the game was absent, like they should get first dibs at the game or something like that. I do feel bad because he's in. I mean, Lamar Jackson's freshman year was 2015, which was the second season after EA decided to stop making the college football video game.
By the way, there was a video out. Some more folks got the embargo kind of lifted on some people who got early access, put some videos out. There was a deep dive today into the single-player mode, Road to Glory. Auburn, very prominent in there. I'll say this. The uniforms in the stadium look awesome in the new game. They did a really, really good job of doing all the Auburn stuff. I think Auburn fans are going to be very pleased with that, how all that turned out.
Yeah, that's there's no question. That's
11 years. Really 11 years we've been waiting for this game.
Yeah,
long
overdue. Yeah, well, and you have that generation of folks who, because, you know, 11 years is a significant amount of time especially when you're young. Like, it's like they didn't have the game growing up. Like, I mean, if the last edition of the game came out when you were 6 or 8 or something, you know, it's been most of your childhood, yeah, most of your life without it.
My youngest brother was 11 when the last game came out. And so it's like he played like revamped and like the old ones for a while. But like he, you know, there was a good chunk of like where I think about when I was a teenager and in college and all that, early college, when they still had the game out, like how much we played it, how important it was to us. And so it'd be cool to see that kind of generation get back into it again. Looking forward to it. I know Dan's still riding for a basketball game.
I don't know
if you're gonna get it.
My thing is, I'm once the game's out, I'm not going to be playing it as much as like the hardcores. So I'm gonna seed I'm gonna seed a lot of the excitement. You know, but I'm happy it exists because I do think, Bill, you can imagine, even as someone who's, you know, it's not your thing, but like you can imagine. Not having the game's absence.
No,
I think it was probably bad for the sport over the last decade or so because I think the game for a long time was a way for folks to follow the sport more closely, mm-hmm. or learn more about it or things like that. And I think that its absence, like I'm curious to see how, you know, if it creates new fans, like if the existence of this video game, like I wonder if there are folks that will follow this college football season more avidly because it's folks that, you know, rosters that they know
rosters
intimately.
That they're either stuck with or learning about.
Yeah, rosters they know more about because of the video game. So yeah, I'm interested to see sort of its impact and it's also going to be. Feels like it's going to be a thing a lot of the players themselves are going mm-hmm. to be playing and commenting on and stuff like that. So, yeah, among the things that are very different about this upcoming college football season, like the return of the EA Sports game is not high on everybody's list, but it's a big deal for some folks.
Got some news here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Play the music, Drew.
Little sad news in the SEC. Monty Kiffin passed away.
Oh.
Yeah, at 84. Ole Miss just announced it.
Excellent football coach, defensive line coach.
Defensive coordinator.
Yep, Tampa for much of his pro career as the Tampa defensive coordinator there, the Tampa 2, and Lane Kiffin's father. Mm-hmm. Obviously, among other things. So, sad piece of news there.
One of the more influential defensive minds in football of just the history of the game. Right.
Tremendously significant coach, and somebody who's not to mention has sons working in the industry now in pretty noteworthy roles.
Yeah. So that's sad to hear. Let's, Justin, I'd love to get your thoughts on obviously one of the things that everybody's looking forward to, in addition to media days, is Big Cat Weekend. We're in a dead period right now, but a lot of players still are making decisions or are at least trimming their lists. You're seeing commitments, you're seeing decommitments, things like that. Auburn is obviously very interested in, I think, one of the priority for Hugh Freeze is he wants to sign a big-time quarterback every year.
They got some options.
The Juju Lewis story, I mean, it's been a roller coaster ride. You feel good, you don't know. He's committed to Southern Cal. He's been committed to them for a while, but he's obviously been looking around. I mean, we were talking with John a little while ago about Hank. We were talking about players not necessarily just staying close to home. Auburn is the closer mm-hmm. school to Juju Lewis. He's been committed to Southern Cal. Colorado definitely has been, you know, making their move. And a lot of folks seem to think that if he decommits from Southern Cal, he may wind up at Colorado now.
Yeah, so that or Indiana, which is very interesting to me. Yeah, it does seem like Auburn has kind of lost some of the steam that, you know, it had in recruiting. But I do think, though, for Auburn, there are some options. I know KJ Lacy seems to be another one you could really make a move for there. And it'll be interesting to see what KJ Lacy ends up doing. He's committed to Texas. Obviously, Texas has Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning still around. So, like, what does he end up doing? And then Deuce Knight was the other one you heard a little bit more about this week.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see if any of those guys show up for Big Cat.
I think
that will be telling.
That would be very, very telling. So, yeah, you want to sign a big-name quarterback every class for sure, but I think, you know, in the case of if Auburn is not able to win the Juju sweepstakes, I do think they do have some options, though, and there's still some time. But, you know, you're going to want to make some moves because, like you said, you want to have a big-name quarterback in every class. Even if Auburn next season ends up starting somebody else or, you know, gets transfer, you know, like probably what they'll end up doing, you want to have a really good quarterback every class and just keep that keep that cycle going, and we'll see what it ends up there. Lacy, I will say, though, and I said this a while back, you know, even when Auburn was going crazy with the Lewis stuff, I like KJ Lacy. I've seen KJ Lacy play a couple times. I really like his game, a little on the smaller end, so is Juju Lewis, but like, I can see where it's a really, really good fit in that system. I'll be very interested to see what Lacy ends up doing this season without Ryan Williams, a wide receiver at Saraland. They're still going to be really good, but it'll be interesting to see what it's like not having, you know, one of the best players in the country to throw to every week.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Greg is next. Hey, Greg.
Hey, guys. How y'all today?
Pretty good.
Well, I hear y'all talking about old Juju, and I don't know, I've listened to a few podcasts. Y'all don't mind me speaking a little candid about some things. Just kind of from what I'm hearing, what I've people I've talked to around the program a little bit. I don't know how much they got their glove on it, their hand on the pulse, but kind of what I'm hearing is he's wanting top QB money. Went to the Elite 11. You know, this kid's also, you got to remember, he's now he's reclassified. Technically, he's supposed to be going to his senior year. Not a senior, it'd be a junior this year, and then he's coming. So he's a younger kid. He's wanting to start right away. And pretty much what I'm hearing is his family don't want him running around a lot. They really want him in more of like a pro-style kind of deal. You know, RPO, you ain't always got to run, but you got to be able to do something. Something there, but you know, he's a good quarterback. You know, about KJ Lacy and all them, and also with Deuce Knight, I've never heard about Deuce Knight a while back. It seemed like Auburn just didn't really go after him hard, and he ended up committing to Notre Dame. I mean, that's a Mississippi kid there, but also what I was hearing is that they was possibly thinking, you know, you're not guaranteed a starting slot at Auburn because we're also thinking of going with a transfer quarterback, kind of like a stopgap deal because, I mean, this kid is young.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about it a little yesterday, Greg. I mean, it's very rare that a team that expects to compete is going to start a true freshman, much less a guy who is, a young true freshman.
Greg, I would look at, and we talked about this yesterday with Jason a little bit, but I would look at Alabama's depth chart after Bryce Young left as sort of like that. That's when a starter leaves, when an entrenched starter leaves for a good program in college football, I would expect a situation where you might have somebody you might have the backup last year and an incoming five-star and a transfer portal quarterback in that room competing to see who the best one is.
Well, you know, he frees guys, but like you said, I mean, it is a difference between what you can tell what Hugh Freeze is trying to do compared to what it's been like, you know, hell, the past decade. He wants to win. He's not going to sit there and say, hey, I'm going to, you know, like Bo Nix. Hey, I got Bo Nix. I'm not bringing nobody else in. You know, no, first of all, we ain't going to go there. But he's going, I think the whole thing about it, nobody really want to say it, is they say, you know, he's trending away from Auburn. Well, Auburn pretty much told him what he didn't want to hear, and they're not going to give him the price tag that he wants and then guarantee him a starting slot, because they're also going to go probably to the transfer portal, maybe via spring or, you know, after the spring practice, after they evaluate, because Hugh Freeze knows, hey, I got some big-time receivers here. If she ain't got nobody sling the ball to them, they're going to leave. So, I mean, you know, it's a lot of pressure in the SEC on a kid, especially a kid that, you know, is going to be 17 years old when he enrolls. So, I mean, if he's going to push his 16 now, I mean,
And I, you know, and I get the desire for any quarterback. I get why a quarterback, you know, even and we appreciate the phone call. Good stuff, Greg.
Yeah.
Like I get why, you know, if there's a quarterback out there who wants to be a starter immediately, you know, coming into college football, especially if, you know, if you ever you have your heart set on the NFL and you know, you think that if the easiest way to get there after 3 years is to be a starter from day one, whatever. We've seen younger quarterbacks, very highly touted guys recently, Arch Manning. The quarterback who's going to be at Tennessee this year, the starter at Tennessee this year, Ialiva, those guys were the top quarterbacks in their respective high school classes, and they went to places where they weren't going to be the starter from day one, because I think they realized by the end of it that, one, the kind of program you want to start at isn't the kind of program that's going to start a true freshman quarterback under most circumstances,
right.
and two, it's a pretty big adjustment from high school football to college football. And if you can spend a year adjusting without being relied on as the starter every week, it also could be the best thing for you down the road. And he mentioned the Bo Nix thing. One, I would mention too that Bo Nix back in 2019, like the option, the way you could change your roster at quarterback was different. Right, like the veteran transfer.
Right, you didn't have the transfer portal the way it is now.
Yeah, no. Auburn did not necessarily have the option to go get a veteran, proven starter to replace Jarrett Stidham the way you would now after a starter, and so they had a competition between Bo and Malik and Gatewood instead.
Yeah, you're right. Appreciate the call, Greg. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes here on the Thursday edition. Great to have Justin Ferguson back with us.
So is it going to be me and you next week with Dan and the
– Yes.
Dan and the, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I could be beaming in live from Radio Row in Dallas if we haven't started the drive home at that point. If they haven't cut the power at Radio Row at 4 o'clock.
Well, that happened to us last year.
They shouldn't be cutting it at 4 since Auburn and Kentucky are supposed to go until 4.
They made it – I mean, we've gotten dirty looks during the Thursday show at Radio Row.
Oh, that has happened.
They want, you know, they're people doing, you know, pointing
well,
at their
like Andy said, the way it used
at their
to
watch.
Be, the way it used to be is, I mean, when it was in Birmingham, especially, everything would wrap up by 12 or 1, and we'd book it and be back in the studio and be able to be on. So it's. They don't expect anybody to be around usually after the last team is done.
Yeah, we're going to book it so I can be back in time for Friday's show. We're going to book it back so I can get back in time for Friday. No, it's
you really think are you going to be back for Friday?
I'll be back for Friday.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's right.
Okay.
I told Don
come in any day and every day.
I'll tell you how I'm feeling. Right now, pencil me in for Friday, but we'll see.
All right, Don's coming in every day.
We'll see how I'm feeling.
It'll actually be the three of us
here
in the studio, and then Dan.
We might stop in Biloxi on the way home or something. I don't know. We'll find some pit stop. You know, somewhere.
Ain't much else you're going to go through.
No, you're right. I think
Monroe is halfway.
By the time you get there, yeah. you've been going for
a while. I think Monroe, Louisiana is about halfway to Dallas. So that's
right. And you'll just keep going.
Justin, one more time for the Observer.
Yep, AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there, $6 a month or $60 a year. Mailbag and a podcast coming out tomorrow. Great time to sign up.
All right, that will do things for the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan and I back with you tomorrow.
Do you want to call Barrett tomorrow as a joke?
Sure.
Try to get Barrett. All right, let's try to get Barrett
tomorrow.
Sure,
just try to remind me. Wait a minute. Where are the Braves?
Okay.
Braves on the road. Okay. There's a chance.
We got a shot.
There's a chance. We'll try. Shot. All right. Come on in and join us. Find out tomorrow as we're back. But that's going to do it for the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.